out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 12th of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we seem to be having a bit of an issue with the chat room at the moment, at the time when I'm recording this. It usually writes itself. If it doesn't, I'll arrange for us to use another chat room. So just hang in there for the time being, if it hasn't already fixed itself, by the time this is actually broadcast. And we've got a few interesting stories that have passed the news desk this morning. And the first one is a continuation of the Jihadi Brides story. And just before we get into that, there is a piece of video that's doing the rounds. I did try to get hold of it so that I could use it in this podcast, which shows you these jihadi brides, and they're all screeching and shrieking at the journalists and pointing their fingers in the air and waving their shoes at them. And their voices just sound unbelievable. They don't sound human. It's like they're squeaking. It's like they are human mice making this noise. And really, really high-pitched, silly voices that they have. I couldn't believe it. They hardly sound human. Anyway, they're in the news today for justifying the rape of pale-skinned women. And of course, it's the same justification for the rape of white women, whether it's grooming gangs doing it or whether it's ISIS doing it. It's because they see anybody that's not Muslim that they can get hold of as their property. They see them as a slave, sex slavery. It's always been the same with Muslims. You can go as far back as you, there are records, and you will find them invading Europe to snatch white women and take them back to Arabia as sex slaves. And we've now got the same thing today, only they don't have to cross over here in their boats, snatch the women and then go back. All they have to do is open up a kebab shop or a curry house and start sweetening up the children that go in there. But this particular story today is talking about the Yazidis. And you'll remember the Yazidis are a non-Muslim tribe with pale skin. And some of them have green eyes. Well, some of them have pale skin. Basically, they've got quite a large amount of white genes where they haven't interbred that much with the Arabs. That's basically what it is. They're not white, but they are pale-skinned. And this is a good example of the fact that race is far more than just skin colour. You can have people with pale skin, people that look as if they are white, but as far as their skin is concerned, but their features will be completely different. They will have the features of non-whites. Particularly, there's an actress in EastEnders that's like that. Sharon in EastEnders, she's quite obviously an octoroon. Her body shape is exactly the same as the overweight Negro that they have in the show. But most people think that she's white just because she's got pale skin. Race is far more than just skin colour. Anyway, an ISIS wife justified the rape and murder of Yazidi women by saying prisoners of war are the property of jihadist fighters. Now think about that. In the West, we have the Geneva Convention. We have various other treaties that we've signed up to treat enemy prisoners as human beings, as rights, the same as if they, we were treating them as if they were prisoners of our own people. But Islam sees anybody that's not a Muslim as an animal, as a dog, as not worthy of being given any rights. And this just shows you that this religion has not advanced past the 6th century. It's still exactly the same. And white people in the 6th century, I mean, even then we treated prisoners of war with respect. Just look back at the story of Caractacus, the British king, who was taken in chains to Rome. And him and his father were actually held as hostages there. And they had a palace there. They had the Palatium Britannicum, which was the first British church in Rome. But they had all the niceties of life that the royal family expects given to them in Rome, even though they were prisoners of war. And then you can go further on in history, and you'll see that there was always exchanges of hostages to ensure that there wasn't bad behavior on either side. This happened with the Danes when they invaded. I'm sure it happened with the Saxons. Well, the Saxons were a little bit underhanded. I mean, they went to a meeting under a white flag with all the princes of Britain at that time, the Welsh, and they were supposed to go there unarmed, and they carried knives in their boots, and they slew all the chivalry of Britain. Very, very bad behavior. But it was seen as bad behavior. It was known as bad behavior. This went totally against all the rules of warfare, the rules of diplomacy at the time. And it's written as such in the Chronicles. So that tells us that even back then in the 5th, 6th century, we had these rules of how you treat other people. And these rules just don't apply in Islam. Non-Muslims are worse than dogs, basically. The unidentified female was filmed speaking in English to another woman about the treatment of Yazidi captives, many of whom have been tortured and sexually assaulted at the hands of the Islamist militants in Syria. In the mobile phone footage, she stated that the Quran permitted the abuse of prisoners by claiming it's not rape in Islam, because they are your property. And this is backed up by the Quran. That's what it says. It says you can do what you like with whatever your right hand possesses. And what it means by what your right hand possesses, it means whether it's a slave that's been bought or whether it's a slave that's been taken, whether it's a kafir that's your captive. If it's your captive, you can do whatever you like with it. And this is still the same today. There are these Muslim scholars that say that. You can look it up on Wikipedia. Islam and slavery. After being pressed on the matter, she admitted that she hadn't read the verse in question and didn't know much about the Islamic holy book. Now, that's obviously what they've been told to say. They've been told to say that they don't really know much about the Quran. They're just these innocent jihadi brides. They were just out there sleeping with the jihadis. They weren't taking part in any war. They don't really know that much about Islam. It's all nonsense. That's all so that they can try and get back into Europe. They've even got a union of them now. They've got a jihadi union where they are advising jihadis and their wives on how they can get back into Europe and what the things are that they need to say and helping them out to try and find fake documents, because a lot of them have thrown their documents away, of course. The footage is believed to have been filmed at a refugee camp in northern Syria, as Allied forces aim to wipe out the last vestige of ISIS's self-declared caliphate. Wearing a niqab and glasses, and she does look particularly ridiculous. I mean, these Muslims do when they're all dressed up in their black bags with a pair of spectacles on top. She said they were prisoners of war and they become slaves. It is in the Quran. They are property. So in Islam, you are allowed to use them. It's not rape in Islam. Because they are your property, they are your slaves. And if it's in the Quran, then who am I to question it? And that's just it. We're told that ISIS has nothing to do with Islam, yet everything about them is based on what it says in the Quran. Sharia law is what they were implementing in Syria and Iraq. And it's no different in Saudi Arabia. In Saudi Arabia, they crucify people, they flog people, they behead people, they do all these horrific things that we were shown that ISIS do. And yet Saudi Arabia are our allies, of course, because they're also allied with Israel. But ISIS certainly weren't upset with Israel either. Israel, the Israeli hospitals were welcoming the ISIS fighters because they were fighting against Syria. So the ISIS fighters would go in across the Golan Heights and blow things up. And then they would be chased back by the Syrian forces and they'd go back over the border into Israel and they'd be nursed back to health in the Israeli hospitals. And there are Israeli ministers on record saying that they would prefer Syria to be under Islamic State rule than under the rule of Bashar Assad. Just think about it, that there's never been any ISIS attacks against Israel. They're the ones that support them. They've supported them all the way through this. Because they see it as they share the same enemy. Also, you've got the covert West arming and funding of ISIS. And this is being proved now by all these weapon stashes that the Syrian Democratic Forces are finding. And all these weapon stashes show that the weapons that they had are French and American, came from the EU and came from America. The West was obviously hoping that ISIS were going to topple Bashar Assad. And we failed to do that, thankfully. When asked to provide more details, she says while laughing, "I don't know much about the Quran." And of course, that's why she's laughing, because she's just been told to say that. The Yazidis are a religious sect whose beliefs combine elements of several ancient Middle Eastern religions. The Islamic State considers them devil worshippers, and its attacks on the group were condemned as a genocide by the United Nations. Well, it isn't just the Yazidis that they think are devil worshippers. They think Christians are the same. They were beheading Christians over there and in Libya. There was a whole lineup of Christian priests that were beheaded. They try to get everybody to feel sorry for these Yazidis. And there's hardly any coverage of what was done to the Christians over there. And of course, the Christians are the ones with the palest skins. They're the ones that are still genetically the closest to the Europeans. They are what's left of the Europeans that were there 1500 years ago. And don't forget, the whole of the Middle East used to be Christian and it used to be white. And then the Arabs invaded, did exactly what Islamic State did to the Yazidi, and destroyed the genome of the white people that were living there. The same happened in Ethiopia. That's why Ethiopia is now full of Negroes and mixed race people. Ethiopia used to be a white country. Islam does the same wherever it goes, and it's in the process of doing it to Europe right now, where these brown people have white wives, white sex slaves. Don't forget, so a lot of them marry white women as well. So whether it's a case of grooming white women and despoiling them, or whether it's a case of getting married to them and use them as a trophy wife, the result is the same. You end up corrupting the genome and you end up with brown children calling themselves British instead of white children calling themselves British. And notice that it's considered a genocide by the United Nations when the Yazidis are displaced from their homes and they're raped and killed. But it's not considered a genocide when that's done to the Europeans in Europe. One Yazidi sex slave changed owners 17 times as she was raped and abused by ISIS thugs who forced her to eat grass before she fled from Baghouz. Now, how is that any different to a white girl that's been groomed by a grooming gang that is passed around 17 or 18 Muslims, raped and abused by them, branded by them, and forced to do sickening things? There is no difference whatsoever. It's just that the mainstream media are loath to link that with Islam, And they're loath to link it with sex slavery, which is what it is. That's why they call it grooming gangs rather than sex slavery. A Swedish jihadi owner would lock her in the home for days without food while he went to fight. Again, this is like the grooming gangs where they would keep these girls locked up, prevent them from seeing their families. And it says here, Swedish, probably not Swedish, probably some a brown person that had a Swedish passport before he went to Syria. Another man, an Albanian, stomped on her hands in his military boots after she scolded him for buying a 9-year-old slave girl. 9 years old. The same age that Aisha was, Muhammad's favourite wife, when he consummated the marriage. She was 9 years old. Muhammad is supposedly the perfect man. All Muslims are supposed to emulate Muhammad. And that was what Muhammad did. By today's standards, he was a pedophile. And of course, the European Union court have decided that to actually call him a pedophile, that's not allowed. That's hate speech. But you can say that by today's standards, he would be classed as a pedophile. There's a difference there. Jihadis decapitated dozens of Yazidi women and dumped the heads in dustbins, according to British SAS troops who entered recaptured ISIS territory. Of course, these are the heads that Shamima Begum was saying, well, it didn't bother me when I saw them. And it bothers white people to see things like that, but quite clearly it doesn't bother non-whites to see horrific scenes like that. And yet we still have whites saying, how could this happen? How could they let this happen? It's like there's also a news story today about these white families, three white families that have had their children stabbed to death by non-whites. And they're bewildered by it. And they're saying, how could the mothers of these children not realize that they were carrying knives and getting into drugs and getting into violence? How could they not see it? How could they not contact the police about it? Well, the reason why they don't is because they're not white. They don't have consciences in the same way that we have consciences. They see us as the enemy. They don't see anything wrong with killing somebody because they've dishonored you. I mean, this has happened with these Syrians that have been put into European schools. They've had an argument with a European boy over a girl, and they've brought a knife to school and they've stabbed him because that's their culture. If they are dishonored, they have the right to go out and kill the person that dishonored them. Like a dueling culture is what they have. And then we bring them over here and they do the same. There are parallels between the grooming gangs and the stabbings and the attacks that are going on over here in Britain. There are parallels with that and ISIS. And obviously there's a link because it's Muslims that are doing it in both cases. Diehard jihadists swelling Syrian refugee camps have vowed revenge as the last remaining ISIS holdout in Baghouz faced collapse. One veiled woman feared to be among thousands of unrepentant fanatics who have fled Baghouz and surrendered to US-backed Kurdish forces, chillingly warned, "We will seek vengeance. There will be blood up to your knees. We have left, but there will be new conquests in the future." I just think that these are the same people that Diane Abbott and all the leftist snowflakes in Britain are saying that we should be bringing back to Britain. We should be bringing these women back to Britain. And here they are threatening that there will be blood up to our knees. And we're just making a rod for our own backs if we bring these savages back into the country, let alone their husbands. At an outpost for US-backed forces outside the village, 10 women stood in front of journalists, pointing their index fingers to the sky and shouting, "The Islamic State is here to stay." They sound really repentant, don't they? One 60-year-old woman, who did not want to be named, said that ISIS will continue because the boys under the terror group's rule, have been trained to fight from a young age. That's the age of these child refugees that we're being told that we should accept into Britain. Exactly the same age as these child soldiers that have been raised by ISIS to kill white people, kill non-Muslims. Those who have fled Baghouz have mostly gone to Al-Hol, a displacement camp in northeast Syria, whose population has swelled to 62,000 people. 90% of them are women and children. An estimated 3,000 Yazidis are still unaccounted for in the besieged ISIS stronghold of Baghouz. Close to 200,000 members of the minority fled their homes when ISIS swept into their heartland over 4 years ago. Kind of like white flight, isn't it? But Yazidi flight. International airstrikes had killed some Yazidis living as slaves in the caliphate, and there are thought to be 1,000 Yazidis still inside Baghouz, including 130 boys training to become jihadis. Now that's interesting. That's interesting. What they are saying there is these Yazidis that were being genocided by ISIS, 130 of their children are training to become jihadis. Now that's interesting because that is exactly what went on in Bulgaria. When Bulgaria was under the heel of the Ottomans, the Turks, I forget whether it was every fourth child, every fourth boy, or whether it was every family that had to provide a boy. In either case, each family would have to produce this one child that the Muslims would then take from that family. They would take them back to the caliphate, and they would train them to become assassins, and they were called Janissaries. And then they would send them back into Bulgaria sometimes to assassinate the family that they had been taken from. Because, of course, they wouldn't remember the family they'd been taken from. Or if they did, they would say that the family didn't want them and they'd sold them to the Islamists as slaves. And they would send them back to kill their own families. They were called Janissaries. And that's exactly what's going on here. These children have been taken from their Yazidi mothers and they're being trained to be jihadis for Islam. So this is nothing new. This is exactly what was going on 100, 150 years ago in Bulgaria and other places in Europe. So that's another quaint Islamic custom, thankfully, that hasn't actually been brought into Europe yet. So although we do already have quite a few of their lovely customs over here, such as female genital mutilation, sex slaves, halal slaughter, and of course all the violence that they bring with them. So much violence, in actual fact, that we've now got blacks moving away from London back to Africa because it's safer there. Spiralling knife, drugs and gang crime in London has been leading many concerned Somali parents to send their teenage offspring who grew up in Britain away to Africa for their own safety. Don't forget, so Somalia has cannibalism there, it has child soldiers, it has massive rape problems, and yet these Somali parents think that it's actually safer than London now. So they have succeeded in turning London into Africa, which is what happens wherever you put Negroes, they just rebuild their homeland wherever they are. Same as with white people. Wherever you put white people, we rebuild our homeland wherever we are. We build civilization. We took the lowest members of white society from Britain and we dropped them off in Australia. And even then, even the prisoners and the people that weren't educated, they were able to build a first-rate, first-world civilization because it's in their blood. And what do the Africans do? Wherever you put them, they bring it back to the Stone Age. And they now think that Africa is safer than London. with 50 to 70% of members of the Somali community in Islington, North London, directly affected by knife violence and county lines drugs crime, mothers who arrived from the troubled African country during the 1990s told The Observer they felt they had no choice but to send their children away from an increasingly dangerous UK. Well, it's great that they are actually sending these Negroes back to Africa, but the reason for it is just unbelievable. Sadia Ali, the treasurer of the Islington Somalia Forum and a mother of seven children this Negress has. Remember, most white people now have under, most white families have under two children. This Negress has seven. She said she sent her 15-year-old son away to live in the country she once fled as a result of the threat of local gang violence in London, said in the newspaper that many other families in the area have done likewise for their children's safety. Hundreds of youngsters have been taken to Somalia, Somaliland and Kenya, some taken all the way to the rural areas. Parents feel they have no choice if they want their sons to be safe, she said. Into the rural areas with all the black magic, the witchcraft and the cannibalism. No doubt with their British passports, they'll be able to come back. They'll probably also still be claiming benefits while they're over there. They'll be living the high life as millionaires over in Somalia on their benefit money. Probably got somebody else signing on for them back in England, pretending to be them. Rakia Ismail, Islington Deputy Mayor, added, sending them away has become the only way they can be safe. This issue of safety has been repeatedly raised by the community, but nobody has listened. So many children have gone abroad. 2 weeks ago there was a stabbing, and a child was taken back home 2 days later. So this is the only way that the Negroes can be safe, is to go back to Africa and live among other Negroes? Yusuf Sheikh Omar, a research associate at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, lamented last week that knife crime in British cities has brought many young Somalis into the criminal justice system and claimed several lives. You know, look at the way that's put, as if knife crime is just one of these things that happens, and it unfortunately puts young Somalis into prison and kills them. It's the Somalis themselves that are carrying this out. It's their own fault that they're ending up in the criminal justice system and that they're ending up dead. It's because the Somalis kill one another. It's like this knife crime thing. It just suddenly appears, just spontaneously appears for some reason. They start stabbing one another. Well, white people don't start doing this. White people don't do this. Young Somali men in Western nations are growing up alienated and at the risk of violence, warned Dr. Omar in the conversation, where he argued that the demographic was particularly susceptible to criminality and Islamist extremism as a result of issues such as marginalisation, poverty, unemployment, racism, identity crises and Islamophobia. So they're going to send them back to Somalia to get away from Islamic extremism. They're going to send them back to Boko Haram. They say that they need to get away from poverty. Well, what about what there is in Africa? Are they saying that London is now more poor than Somalia? Racism? Well, maybe they should go back. At least that would prevent the racism, wouldn't it? All these things that he's pointing out, these terrible things, they can all be solved by heading off back to Africa, can't they? Identity crises. I mean, who brought that identity crisis on them, if not themselves, for coming into a white country and pretending to be white? Of course they've got identity crises. They know damn well that they're not white. They're not British. They just have a bit of paper that tells them so. And this is great that young Africans are leaving to go back to Africa. But the reason why is just another damning indictment on the government's immigration policy and conclusive proof, once again, that nationalists have been telling the truth. Nationalists are proved right once again We've always said if you bring Africans into Britain, they will turn Britain into Africa. And that's exactly what they've done in London. And because it's cold over here, they might as well go back and be warm over there, because they face exactly the same risks over there as they do in London now. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Carolyn Jaeger. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan at Radio.